Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight for Diz Dad's podcast number 522 for Sunday, July 30th, 2017, are David Platt.
Hello, everybody.
Chris Papchek.
Hello, Diz Dads.
And panel newcomer, Dustin Hertz.
Hey, everybody.
So there have been a lot of changes lately over at Disneyland in general, and specifically at Disney California Adventure. So we thought this would be a good time to revisit the question of how best to tour the Disneyland Resort's second gate. But before we jump into that discussion, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor, Fantastic Memories Travel, and its Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so that you can focus on the fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. All right, so the original kind of trigger for putting this topic on the long-term schedule was a discussion that we had during David Platt's trip report recently, which we've recorded and you haven't heard yet, but what really stood out in that trip report was that with the addition of Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout in Disney California Adventure, David noticed a really significant shift in especially that early morning traffic pattern at Disney California Adventure. And there had been sort of the ongoing issues with the Frozen stage show and the scheduling of that show and the way that getting into that show was handled. So we knew we needed to talk about that as well. So we put this on the schedule and then whoosh, the floodgates open. Because there's now so much more to talk about with Disneyland and touring at Disney California Adventure specifically. So want to start us off with the announcements that came out just last week as we're recording from the D23 event. And the one I think that has the biggest touring impact is what I've just been referring to as the parade shuffle. So, Chris, I know you were really excited about this parade shuffle. Why don't you talk about a little bit what's happening with evening entertainment and sort of afternoon and evening entertainment at Disney California Adventure as part of this Pixar celebration that's going to be going on sort of all year for 2018?
Well, we have been announced for Pixar specifically, we will get the Pixar Pier, getting a whole re-theming of that area, probably going to be centered around Midway Mania, which is already in place, I would assume.
Right, right. Well, we know that, and at least some of the concept art they've shared shows some changes to Mickey's Fun Wheel. Even it looked like we had Luxo on the Fun Wheel. Now, whether that actually happens or not, I don't think we know yet. But whatever it is, there's going to be some substantial retheming going on in Paradise Pier, and then along with the retheming, sort of physically, they're shuffling around the afternoon and evening entertainment that's happening in Disney California Adventure. You know, Disney California Adventure for some time now has been the home for the Pixar Play Parade, and obviously, they can't get rid of the Pixar Play Parade during the celebration of Pixar. That wouldn't make any sense. So, David, what are they doing with that instead?
Well, this is the announcement that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because it seems like they're really trying to increase the Pixar presence over at DCA. And so what do? They're taking the Pixar Play Parade and moving it over to Disneyland. But at the same time, they are returning Paint the Night over at DCA, which I don't think anybody is upset about. So, so I'm assuming they haven't announced this formally, but I'm assuming that means Soundstational is going into retirement, since Pixar Play Parade will now be Disneyland's daytime parade, I'm assuming.
Right. I think that's what all of us are assuming. It's not really a parade that's very well suited to a conversion to nighttime. It's not a light parade at all. So I think you're right. I think that's the expectation, is that it'll fill for Soundstational. And then the flip side is that for the first time since, you know, early days of Disney California Adventure when they tried to use the Main Street Electrical Parade to give people some excuse to stay at DCA past noon. It's going to have a nighttime light parade in California Adventure with Paint the Night making that transition. And did I see right? Not just that Paint the Night is going to be rolling back out in California Adventure, but with a new float?
Yeah, I'm blanking on what the new float was, though.
That's just it. They didn't say. They just said
they didn't say.
A new float.
That's right. Now, what I'm finding really interesting is, like you said, this is the first time in quite a while that DCA has had a nighttime parade. But it is the first time it's had a nighttime parade in conjunction with World of Color. I'm really curious to see how that works, because, I mean, the nighttime parade goes straight through that World of Color, you know, seating area. I mean, not the seating area, but, you know, kind of where the crowds are.
Right, right. That gathering point, which is kind of where everybody is congregating, getting ready for that show to begin. And yeah, so I
think 8 o'clock World of Colors may be a thing of the past.
Oh, well, now that's an interesting point. So maybe it does mean that, and there's an interesting piece that I hadn't really thought about, but maybe that's an issue of, you know, we can save a little wear and tear on World of Color by bringing in this other show. And so we can kind of balance, and unlike over at, you know, Disneyland, where there was often this expectation that you'd get two parades, right? Instead, mm-hmm. they can stick with a probably, you know, 8 o'clock, 8:30 parade, and then 9 o'clock, 9:30 World of Color.
I would think the World of Color show might even take place after closing, like it usually does.
Mm, yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. I just think it'll be pushed a little later, but I agree. I think it'll still be after closing.
Right, they're almost going to have to stagger them even more than that, because otherwise, if you catch the parade at the end of the route, you'd never make it in time for World of Color.
Well, I think that's the intention. It's to disperse the crowd.
Yeah. It thins the crowd, and I mean, if you think about it, it's the same game they play with Fantasmic in Disneyland, right? Trying to do Fantasmic and the fireworks, it's almost not possible.
No, it's overloaded.
So that will be really interesting at the end of the evening, kind of regardless, right? Because you've got this new element that people are going to be adjusting to, and everybody's going to want to see, especially if they're introducing a new, as yet unnamed float, presumably a Pixar themed float, I would assume. And then, you know, World of Color kind of finding its feet, so to speak, in this transition. Because the other thing too is that they're going to be doing World of Color. They haven't announced yet any closing of World of Color during the transition to Pixar Pier either.
That's true.
And if they're not going to shut down World of Color during this transition, that could be interesting as well, because, you know, the pier serves a kind of significant role these days in that World of Color show as not just a canvas, but it's part of the show. That backdrop is involved.
Sure.
Yeah. Even the pre-show with the
fun wheel. Yeah.
The fun wheel challenge that they have. I mean, right. It's all in the whole thing, the before the show and during. So it's pretty integral.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's all sort of end of the evening stuff. Now, big picture wise, we did already talked about Paradise Pier. The other kind of transition piece that came out of D23 is that we finally did get official confirmation. We are getting a superhero land at Disneyland. The information, I mean, in the context of all these big announcements, it kind of got lost, partially because we got very little detail. Did anybody glean anything of substance from what came out at D23 that, you know, Superhero Land was coming?
The only noticeable thing about that announcement, I mean, like you said, there was so little in it. I don't believe it ever said there were going to be any attractions. I think it intimated things like meet and greets and experiences. I don't know that it mentioned an attraction. I would be surprised if there wasn't one, But
right, but they did avoid saying anything specific about one, which is in the con, you know, because it was at D23 where they were announcing new attractions left and right, it kind of stood out in absence. Especially since I think all of us had heard rumors of things like, you know, a Captain America roller coaster that's been in the rumors for a long time.
I know there haven't been many rumors about this, but I would be surprised if they don't bring the Iron Man ride over from China.
Well, you know, that's an interesting one. Here's the reason I think it might not get here, and we you know, Captain America might be more likely. Invariably, when Disney introduces those new attractions overseas, there is some period of exclusivity before they can use it anywhere else.
That is true, yeah.
And it just opened in Hong Kong, I want to say just this past year.
Yeah, it's not too far, not too long ago.
So, you know, in the context of these kind of agreements, usually it's at least 5 years. And I don't know if they want to wait 5 years to open Superhero Land.
What if it's something similar and small, like they had an innovation since the Star Wars launch bay took over, where you have small meet and greets that are themed for Thor and Captain America, maybe taking over the theater next to where the Monsters, Inc. is? You know,
oh, that
it's in Hollywood area, but it's close to that Mission Breakout.
Right, right. Yeah, I could see that. And you know, it may just be that for the short term, we'll get smaller things. But I felt like if that's all it was going to be, why would they bother to make an announcement about it at D23? I don't know.
I mean, it may be all just rumors. And I know this is not necessarily we're talking about rumors, but wasn't there a patent possibly submitted for a Captain America throwing shield experience?
Yes, there was.
That's right.
Was that specific? And now can that be placed in Walt Disney World with the whole Universal?
It can't be in Walt Disney World, but it could be in Disneyland because Disneyland is west of the Mississippi.
So that could be a possibility of a small attraction we could get. They did have that huge Iron Man set up in Innovations.
Right, right.
I'm sure they have that in store somewhere. They might just bring that over. And seeing as how we have Avengers coming next year, that could be something they could put in pretty quickly.
Right. Well, and they've been in, right, you know, all around this summer. So, frankly, I don't know, David, maybe that that patent on the throwing shield, you know, helps solve the firing squad in a circle issue they have during their Avengers Academy thing.
Very well could be, although I don't envision them investing that much money in that.
Okay, well, that's enough speculation about that. The other sort of big piece that's going to impact touring more significantly, obviously, than something that isn't happening yet, that is still just rumor, is just yesterday, as we're recording this, MaxPass went live at Disneyland. And for folks who are not familiar with MaxPass, this is a different animal. I mean, you know, we had paper FastPass, then we all learned about FastPass Plus for Walt Disney World. Then we learned about electronic FastPasses last month at Disneyland. And now, finally, we get the rollout of MaxPass, which was announced way back in January, but it's finally going live. It's almost got some elements of all of these different kinds of you know, ride reservation distribution systems, but it is its own unique system. So, I don't know, David, you want to take first stab at kind of describing how MaxPass works?
Sure. It's a tough one to describe because, like you said, it's kind of a bunch of different things. First off, unlike any other version of FastPass we've seen before, it's a paid service. It's $10 a day per person in your party. So say if you have a large family of five, it's $50 a day to use MaxPass. And essentially what it does, it removes the need to go to a FastPass machine to pull a FastPass. If you are wanting a FastPass for a certain attraction, you just open up the app on your phone. You navigate to the MaxPass screen. It shows you what FastPasses are available, and you reserve it right there in your phone. When your FastPass window comes up, You go to the attraction, scan the app on your phone, and it will let you in. So it does not allow you to reserve fast passes in advance, like Fast Pass Plus at Walt Disney World. All it is, it's an electronic replacement for walking to the machine, which doesn't sound like a lot. But think about over at Disneyland, if you are, you know, in line at Splash Mountain and you say, gosh, I really want to ride Space Mountain at some point, you can literally open up your phone right there and reserve your Fast Pass for Space Mountain instead of walking 20 or 30 minutes all the way across the park through the crowds to get it.
Right.
You know, well, it's,
and yeah. Back to DCA, you know, examples at DCA exist too. You could be, you know, as soon as you scan your Fast Pass over at Soarin', right? As soon as you've scanned that one, so you've used it, you could be making a Fast Pass reservation for Radiator Springs Racers.
Yes. And you can also do either park, which was up in the air for a while whether that was gonna happen. So right. You could, you know, have just ridden Radiator Springs Racers, and you could reserve Space Mountain over at Disneyland and park hop over there.
Right. And that really is a huge difference. That's one of those things that, you know, it's the equivalent of being able to fly. and so there's also, I feel like we have to give up this tip because it's too cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's if they don't close this loophole, I'm going to be amazed. I'm assuming you're talking about the thing we talked about yesterday, Aaron,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So as of right now, if you do not have early entry at a park, you could potentially still reserve a Max Pass during early entry. If you, so for example, at DCA often, you know, say the park opens at 8 a.m. for early entry. Regular park guests who do not have early entry are often led into the park 8:30, 8:40, and held at the ropes there at around Carthay Circle. If you are in that area, you can reserve a Fast Pass. The Max Pass app has no way of knowing whether you have early entry or not. So people reporting yesterday while they were waiting in line at the rope drop, they were reserving Fast Passes for Radiator Springs Racers or Guardians of the Galaxy. Somebody at 8:40 a.m. while he was waiting for a 9 a.m. park opening reserved an 8:40 Fast Pass for Guardians of the Galaxy. So as soon as the ropes dropped at 9 a.m., he walked over, got on the ride.
And right, and the best part about that is it means that his next window started even sooner.
Yeah, as soon as he used that Fast Pass, then he grabbed one for Radiator Springs Racers using the app. So it's you know, it could be a game changer. It really could.
Right, and the other big way you could leverage that is because you can do that, you know, you could be one of those days where, you know, you have early admission at Disneyland, but you know, you also want to be getting on attractions at California Adventure that doesn't open for another hour. Well, you mm-hmm. get your early admission to Disneyland at 8 a.m. You may or may not even need a Fast Pass at that point for anything, which means mm-hmm. you're available. But it's 8 a.m., so you might as well go ahead and get your Fast Pass for Radiator Springs Racers.
Yeah, for sure.
So you could get in probably 4 or 5 rides at Disneyland. And then just go walk on Radiator Springs Racers almost.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So that's the rough outlines of Max Pass. I'm going to guess at some point we're just going to do a whole show about the various various kinds of Fast Pass. The keys really to remember are ultimately it works like Fast Pass in that you can only have one at a time. You can't make them in advance. You know, the windows open the same way. The real difference is that you don't have to walk from where you're standing to the distribution point. And there is some amount of geolocation involved. You have to be physically in a park in order to make the reservation. And the interesting tandem piece is that it can't check this. So I guess it's just relying on you to be honest. Because it asks whether all, well, I guess it can look and see whether everybody is scanned in their tickets.
Yeah, everybody has to be scanned into the park.
So you can't make a Fast Pass reservation using Max Pass for somebody who's still back at the hotel.
Correct. And one other thing that is not really related to the Fast Pass functionality, but probably should be mentioned, is that the $10 a day fee also includes unlimited PhotoPass photos. So
right.
Essentially the cost of a daily photo pass just went down to $10.
Yeah. No, and that's a nice little bonus. I mean, you can look at it either way, right? Either the photo pass is the bonus for Max Pass, or Max Pass is the bonus for photo pass. So that's the Max Pass element. And the reason we wanted to talk about that a little bit is because it may have an impact on what we really wanted to get to, the meat of this show, which is to talk about touring. So, you know, Dustin, get you involved here a little bit now and have you talk about, you know, when you're figuring out your plan of attack for California Adventure, what are the things that you're going to put at the top of the priority list as, you know, these are the things that we're going to build our plan around?
The biggest thing for us when we're touring is, you know, what's our must-dos. And, you know, with my family, we have two little kids, so waiting in line is not something we like to do. So when we went on our last trip, you know, Guardians was the main priority for us. So we were trying to figure out, you know, how can we get on it and, you know, keep riding as many times as we can.
Sure.
That was the one thing, like you mentioned before, how they'll let you in early. You know, at least this summer when we went, it was only, you know, while we were there for the week, 15 or 20 minutes after they let the early entry crowd in. And once all those turnstiles went down, they started letting the regular guests in and then just had checkpoints throughout the park.
Right. So they were kind of holding people towards the center of the park until it was regular admission.
Well, they let you queue up for Guardians.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. They were actually letting, that's right. And I don't know that they would do that normally. I think that had to do specifically brand new opening rush, but
yeah. There was a huge number of people there. But yeah, so our biggest thing was getting a fast pass for Guardians first.
Yeah. And so, David, that echoes what you talked about with this massive shift in the morning crowd.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, granted, I was there on opening weekend for Guardians of the Galaxy, so that it's going to have a more pronounced effect probably than now that it's been open a couple months, the novelty is perhaps wearing off a little bit. But on the morning that we were there for early entry, it was the I'm trying to recall, I think the actual day that Guardians opened, we got our fast pass for Guardians. We walked over through Cars Land and it was deserted. I mean, I have a picture. We were walking over to Radiator Springs Racers. I turned around. There were literally three people in sight. I took a picture of it because I knew nobody would believe me. Three people in Cars Land after the park was already open, which is just insane. So we, you know, knocked out all of Cars Land and just, you know, barely any time at all. And hit Paradise Pier, knocked out most of that. We had the majority of the park done probably in an hour and a half. You know, it was nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, now some of that obviously is opening weekend. That's going to moderate somewhat, but it does appear that, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, you know, as grammatically and punctuationally challenged as it is, is having an ongoing effect on that crowd flow. So, you know, Chris, you heard Dustin's family, they really wanted to make Mission Breakout a focus. So they were there, they were getting in line to do that immediately using FastPass. How about you? What's your sort of, especially starting out, you know, what are you building your plan around?
Well, as it's been in the past, since it's opened up, is a racer's fast pass. I mean, that has always been the go-to line immediately when you walk into the park. That was the rare thing that it was one of the fast passes that was nowhere near the attraction. And with the addition of Max Pass Plus, the Max Pass, it very well might take away from a small amount. I know people are going to be hindered from that $10 per ticket per day price. So that those paper fast passes are still going to dominate.
Right. I mean, there's obviously going to be more people using paper FastPasses than MaxPass, but it should at least bleed out a bit of that backup of just the line at the FastPass machine for Radiator Springs Racers. I mean, that almost in and of itself was, you know, the worst attraction line at DCA.
Wow. It was. You would wait 20, 25 minutes just to get a FastPass. And even if you were there at opening, you would be getting a fast pass at, you know, afternoon already. And at opening at 8 or 9 o'clock, it would already be pushed out to the middle of the day. But our main focus for DCA is Cars Land, especially our last trip with three families, and with kids all around that age that they are honed in on the Cars brand. That is, for me too, favorite attraction. I know I've said it on here before. I absolutely love racers, and if I can ride it more than once, I'm going to get on there as much as I can with a fast pass, a single rider, or standby, which I would never really want to do because it's always at least 2 hours.
Right. Well, that's one thing, touching on Radiator Springs Racers. Let's just take Guardians of the Galaxy out of the equation. Kind of the dilemma with Radiator Springs Racers for everybody is, what do you do if you're there at Rope Drop? Do you chance, you know, going straight to the ride and, you know, being one of the first on the ride for standby? Do you get in the fast pass line? Max Pass has taken that out of the equation. Now you can do both at the same time. You head for standby while you're walking, because, you know, nobody wants to be walking and using their cell phone. When you're in line, you can get your fast pass. So you ride it twice. You've already gotten to ride it twice, essentially, standby and fast pass.
It definitely changes up the gameplay early in the morning for sure.
Yeah.
It's going to change the way the day is planned, only because I like the idea of the Max Pass. It completely takes away the runner. It gives you that leg up and not having to do that extra job while trying to get as much done in one day.
Right, right. Absolutely. And you know, it starts to get to be a little more difficult calculus, right? I mean, what does it take to make that $10 a day per person worth it? And, you know, as we go through these things, I think you start to see that maybe there is some value to it, and it gets to be harder and harder to say, you know, I'm not going to pull the trigger on it this time.
Right. That's what it seems like during busy times. Like, you almost would have to go with the Max Pass just for how versatile it can be and not having to run all over the park.
Yeah. And you may not even need it for the whole trip. I mean, we usually do 3 days, and I could see us doing our main day in Disneyland and our main day in California Adventure each day and use it then. And then on that, maybe that last day, you know, just hit up whatever we can with a paper fast pass or regular standby.
Yeah. Yeah. Just take it a little easier on that third day when you've done all your must do's already.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. And that's one of the, I guess, nice things that I had totally spaced, you know, about the way that it's being marketed and sold. Because most ticket products from Disney are length of ticket. This is really an exception. There are very few things that Disney will sell you that are sort of an element of your ticket package that don't have to be purchased so that they apply across the entire ticket.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking of another one except for PhotoPass.
Well, the only other one's PhotoPass at Disneyland.
Yeah. I think your Magical Express at Disney World between parks, and
that was
the Express transportation. Yeah,
which works somewhat similarly, although they have there's still a length of stay purchase option, which there isn't for MaxPass yet.
There actually is, Aaron.
Oh, is there? I'm sorry.
There is one for an annual pass.
No,
it's
they
$75 annual.
I checked the ticket website this morning. You have the option when buying a multi-day ticket of adding MaxPass for your entire ticket.
But so, is it discounted at all, or is it still $10
per person? There's no discount at all.
Oh, okay. So at least for the
there's no incentive to do it that way.
Right. I mean, at least the Park Express transportation, there's a discount for getting it for your length of stay, and it was a pretty good discount.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant one too.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So priorities. It sounds like in the morning you're basically making your choice between Radiator Springs Racers or Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. It's got to be one or the other. And what do you think? Is it still, you know, the let's take Max Pass out of the equation for a minute and assume that that's not going to be for everybody every trip every day. So when you're making that decision, what do you think? I mean, Dustin, are you going straight for the line there at Guardians of the Galaxy, or are you going to grab a fast pass and then get in line?
For Guardians, first thing in the morning, usually the standby line is crazy because everybody's running there, and I don't feel like, you know, having to go shoulder to shoulder with everybody and fight through and drag my family through. So I would just grab a fast pass and then head to Cars Land or Paradise Pier area and then deal with Guardians later. Because typically, you know, it spikes first thing in the morning when everybody rushes to it, and then it'll even out throughout the day. So if I'm going to do standby again, I'll do it later in the day once the standby line's calmed down a little bit.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to grab, so my question is, so you're going to hit Hollywood Land sort of on your way, I'm guessing, right? You're going to grab your paper fast pass for Guardians and then go stand and do standby at Radiator Springs. Is that the plan?
Right.
Okay. Makes sense. So, Chris, Dave, or would you be in agreement with that? Is that the best approach?
I think so. That's a good when you're starting from the left and going around hitting the park. Yeah, that's a good place to start.
I think for me it depends. Are we talking a normal park hour day or early entry day? Or
well, talk about why it would make a difference and what would be different.
Okay, early entry now. They have begun distributing fast passes for most rides during early entry, so you could potentially, let me think this through. Hold on.
Talking yourself out of it, huh?
Yeah. I think that during early entry, at least in my experience, the line for Guardians of the Galaxy was pretty manageable, the standby line. So I would immediately jump in the fast pass line for Guardians, grab a fast pass, jump in the standby line right at once. Around that time, if you were, you know, towards the front of the fast pass line, your fast pass is probably for 8:40. I'd ride it again with the fast pass, and then head over, and you should hit Radiator Springs before the regular park hours start, and you can get a fast pass there.
All right, so you're going to leverage early entry hard on that early entry day and get in two rides on Guardians and Radiator Springs before park even opens for the rest of the guests.
A fast pass for Radiator Springs, yeah.
Oh, get a fast pass. You're not going to get on the traction. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to ride either of these two, you know, insanely popular rides multiple times, early entry is invaluable. I think Guardians of the Galaxy has made early entry so much more worthwhile at DCA. It's always been good, but now it's even more worthwhile.
Right, and the real trick is that the only way to get early entry at DCA still is to stay in one of those three on-property hotels, because there is no magic morning on the DCA side.
Yep, for sure. I mean, I talked about this on my trip report that will be released soon. On our early entry day on the weekend that Guardians of the Galaxy opened, in the first 90 minutes of park opening, we rode it four times, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
It was nuts. Yeah, I leveraged all my tips and all my park strategy that morning. For sure.
So Chris, are you in agreement with David, or are you leaning more towards Dustin's side? Are we gonna focus on, you know, multiple rides on Guardians, or are we gonna get your favorite, Radiator Springs, higher on the list?
Well, that's a disadvantage. David and Dustin both got to actually see Mission Breakout open. on their trip. I got to see it under construction a month prior. I just missed it.
Not quite as impressive.
Now, is that queue, is it worth going through the regular queue as opposed to just bypassing and go through FastPass, or do you kind of see about the same stuff?
No, that was the one regret that I had, because I never went through the standby line. I only did FastPass, and you skip a lot of the collector's items in there.
Yeah, you don't get nearly as much time to examine the lobby area if you're in the FastPass line, for sure. And there's a lot to look at in there.
It's been a long time since I've been to Disney World, and I don't remember, is the Hollywood Tower of Terror in Hollywood Studios, is their queue line area, the lobby, was it as thematic as the one in California?
Yeah. I mean, the Tower of Terror at Walt Disney World has always been sort of the original. You know, the others have been versions of what was done at Walt Disney World, and that really became even more true when, you know, the Walt Disney World version got the upgrade to randomization and all that. The theming, you know, always was at the top of its game as well. So, you know, that piece, and that's not changing. I mean, there's no indication that we're going to get Guardians on the East Coast anytime soon. Not at Tower. That tower seems to be sacred.
I was just saying, like, I just remember it was a very large lobby as far as the Tower of Terror in California. And it was all very well themed.
Yes, yes.
A lot to see. I was just assuming with what I've seen online with the videos of Guardians and the Collector's collection, it looks pretty extensive.
Yes,
and
yes.
A lot to see. So I was just, it sounds like if you have the advantage to hit it early and get a fast pass as well as do a standby, then I would do both. I would experience both first off and knock it out, and then, you know, get to Cars, because those are going to be your two bottleneck areas. They're both, you know,
sorry, you were cutting out. I thought you were done talking. I'm sorry.
No, I just know, like you were saying, you know, as far as your day is concerned, you're going to hit the bottlenecks of the crowds. They're all going to swarm to those areas, and you're going to be overwhelmed with how small those areas can be.
Sure. And one thing to take into consideration, too, when thinking about, you know, which of the two major rides to hit first, Radiator Springs Fast Passes are lasting a lot longer into the day now because of Guardians. So before we have been conditioned to think that you have to get that Radiator Springs Fast Pass within the first hour or two, or you have no chance. That's not true anymore. They're lasting until 1-2 o'clock routinely. So.
Which is good.
Yeah,
you don't have to spend your morning around getting that first.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, you haven't lost out on Radiator Springs if you do choose to focus on Guardians of the Galaxy in the morning.
Well, and here's the other
last 5 years. So it was always racers first thing.
Sure.
Well, and here's the other piece to that too, is it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, you know, things like the touringplans.com, you know, their premium subscription for Disneyland, where they will help you kind of predict when fast passes, you know, what the return times are likely to be if you go to pull a fast pass at a particular time. Like as they build up some data and get more reliable results for that, that's going to get interesting with Radiator Springs, because I know that there are a lot of people, for example, who want to try and time that later in the day fast pass so that they can ride after dark.
Sure.
And, you know, it used to be mostly a crapshoot, right? I mean, there wasn't so much you could do to time it, but as it stretches out a bit, it may get, you know, there may get to be a bit more of a system to figuring out, you know, when to go back to pull that fast pass in order to get an evening fast pass ride. All right, so we've talked a lot about where we're starting. Where do we go next? We've got a lingering issue that's going to really affect the rest of our day one way or another, and that is if you've got a kid for whom that Frozen stage show is a must-do, you almost have to build the rest of your day around how you're going to work out accessing that Frozen show.
Yeah, I mean, that Frozen show, it's just a schedule killer. It almost necessitates at least a second day in DCA if you want to do everything successfully.
Yes, most definitely.
So talk a little bit. I don't know, Dustin, did you check out the Frozen show or?
No, luckily our daughter isn't old enough to voice her opinion yet.
I miss those days.
Yes, and knowing she wouldn't sit through an hour long show and another hour long wait in line for it. We skipped it while we were there.
Okay, so you skipped it. David and Chris, I know that you've done the show. I mean, Chris, talk a little bit about the frequency of the show and sort of how you access it, because even that is almost unique to that show.
So I believe when it, I didn't see it when it first opened, I think it was last year, they did have FastPass for it, but that didn't last very long, so they did away with it. And the queue is just like it was with Aladdin prior to Frozen. Unfortunately, though, the lineup is extremely insane. Is a great way to put it. If you're not there an hour early, like Dustin was saying, you're not getting a spot. And once they were counting everyone coming in, and they will close off sections of the theater. And if you're not in with your party, and this was different, and we found this out as we were waiting in line in Cars Land for was it the Luigi's? What is the new Luigi's?
Flying Tires. Rollicking Roadsters.
Yeah, not worth doing. I'm just going to throw that out there. We were waiting in line as my wife was trying to hold our spot, which we found out they do not want you to do. You have to have your entire party waiting in line show, and with very minimal shade middle of the day, that can be quite taxing, especially since you're not waiting in line with a stroller. You have to do the stroller parking.
Yeah, so it is brutal in that line. So hot.
Your kids are cranky. They want to be held. They don't want to stand and wait. And all you can think of is like, oh, we just have to get inside for the air conditioning and we can sit for 45 minutes and enjoy. Hopefully they will pay attention. So it's a lot to wait for it, but if you can get there, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a great show.
So the challenge is that you've got a 45 minute show, but it takes an hour in line to get into the show. So you've basically cost yourself nearly 2 hours of your entire theme park day just to get a chance to watch the show. And so you've got to, and there are consequences to that everywhere because it's long enough time. Like, for example, I can't even think of an attraction except maybe Racers where you could grab a fast pass before getting in line and be comfortable that your fast pass time wouldn't be close to gone by the time you got out of the show and got over to the attraction.
You're not even being able to like have someone hold that place in line and have the kids distracted with another attraction, a ride, a meet and greet, or even getting some food. I mean, there's some snacks in line you can get, but you are dedicated the whole party, if you're going to be doing that show for at least 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah. So, and well, back to your point you were just making, Aaron, that is another place where MaxPass could come into play.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah. You can keep an eye on the return times while you're in line and get one for, you know, right after the show.
Right. As you can, you don't have to get one before getting in that hour long line, sure. Right? You can get up to the front of the line and then grab your fast pass right before you go in for the 45 minute show. And then you'll probably be ready to grab, you know, get on the attraction as soon as you get off.
Yeah. And, you know, there still is one way available that you don't have to wait in that line, which probably deserves a mention here. And that's the frozen dining package at Carthay Circle. I have a hard time with that one. As you know, Aaron, we've talked about it before. It is so expensive. It's, I believe, current price is $89 per person for for a 3-course meal from Carthay Circle, where your choices are extremely limited. And then you get to, you know, basically enter the theater before the standby line to pick your seat. So you still have to show up, you know, a half an hour early for the show, because that's around when they start letting people in. But you do get your choice of the best seat. Personally, I don't think it's a great value, just because, I mean, there's only 3 people in our family. And we spent close to, you know, over $300 once we paid tip and everything.
Ouch.
And that's just, yeah, for a 45-minute show. I mean, granted, lunch at Carthay Circle is always awesome, but that's a steep price.
Right, and really, it's only ultimately saving you 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's what it's saving you is standing in that baking heat.
Right, right, in the exposed line is the problem.
Yeah, yes.
And the thing is, there is really no bad seat in that theater.
No, if you get in the building, you're good.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, even if you're in the line, once they've closed it off and they've hit max capacity, you're going to have a good seat for that show.
Right. All right. So we've talked about, you know, our two super headliners that we've got to do very first thing. We've talked about managing the show that is like the, you know, it's the tar pit in the middle of the park day almost. But there's a lot more now to see at DCA than just what we've talked about. So what are going to be the other highlight elements that, you know, most families, like Dustin, what are the other things once you've gotten through Guardians of the Galaxy and Radiator Springs Racers, Frozen show aside, because your daughter's not ready to demand it. What are the other things, maybe the next, you know, kind of 4 or 5 attractions at DCA that are on the list that you have to kind of build the rest of your day around?
Right, then you're getting over into the Paradise Pier area, right, where you've got, you know, Toy Story Mania, California Screamin', Mickey's Fun Wheel, and Goofy's Sky School, you know, where the key things we wanted to try and attack next. Then the, you know, I guess depending on, you know, your travel party for who you're with, that's where, you know, single rider at this point will probably help out for California Screamin'. So you may not have to waste the fast pass or the standby line for that.
Sure, sure. And what about you, Chris? What are those next sort of 4 or 5 priorities? Are you also heading, you know, back to Paradise Pier / Pixar Pier?
I believe so, because is it 11 o'clock?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's after 11 o'clock probably by now. It depends on what you've done with Frozen.
Well, we know what happens at 11 in DCA is that you can get beer. Can't do that in Disneyland. Paradise Pier, I definitely enjoy with the beer carts, the margaritas. It's definitely a good, hey, midway day. It's usually our second day, so it's a nice, hey, we're going to relax here for a bit. Maybe check out the Boat Inn Bakery tour, free sourdough bread. Take in the AC, especially sure. If it's midday, it's going to be hot. So at any point in time that you can get inside for a quick moment and take advantage of that, definitely want to cool down, because a lot of that park does not have covered queue areas.
Right. So, all right. So quiz time, David.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you to the test here. I just pulled up the touring plans wait time forecasts for, okay, you know, your busy day at California Adventure, right? This is a day that they rate an 8 out of 10 in the summer.
Okay.
So busy day at California Adventure. Let's take Radiator Springs and Guardians Galaxy off the table, 'cause we already did those first thing in the morning. So what do you think are the three attractions, aside from those, that have the longest average wait times. I guess we can take the Frozen show out too, because it's kind of an odd situation.
Okay, so you're talking average wait time all day or at a specific time of day? Or what do you mean?
I mean, I'm kind of looking at these across, you know, the milestone times that they give you. So,
got it. Okay.
You know, kind of in aggregate.
Toy Story.
Okay, that's one of them.
Grizzly River Run.
That's one of them.
And Soarin'.
And that's a third.
Bam.
You did quite well. Now, I am looking at these, and there is some variation about time of day. That's true.
Sure. Soarin' can have really manageable lines early in the day.
Yeah, and does get a lot longer. Grizzly River Run the same way. I mean, Grizzly is like, you know, a 10-minute wait by 10 a.m., but by, you know, just after lunch, it jumps up over an hour.
Yes.
Which makes a certain amount of sense. It's a water ride. But there are a couple other attractions here that I notice that have consistently wait times that are all in excess of, you know, right around half an hour, basically. One of them's already been mentioned.
California Screamin'.
Okay. Here's the other one. And this is the one I was kind of working us to get to, because it's one that if you don't think about it, it's going to come back and bite you, I bet.
The Mickey's Fun Wheel Crazy Ones.
Okay, well, that's one I hadn't actually even thought about so much, but it is there on the list.
I would say, has it been mentioned yet?
No.
Ariel.
Actually, no. Little Mermaid isn't bad.
Okay. Huh.
Is it?
It's a character.
Like a character meet and greet? I'm confused.
Yep.
Oh, then it's Anna and Elsa. But take that with a big caveat. Their wait times on Anna and Elsa are notoriously wrong.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good to know.
Does it say 25 minutes?
It says 30 minutes consistently.
All day. It'll say 30 minutes all day long, no matter what time you look.
Okay. Okay.
We did it, and we waited 15, and we were in and out and done.
Okay. So this is a good thing to know.
Yeah, I have rarely waited more than 5 minutes for Anna and Elsa.
Interesting. I wonder if it's because they use average wait times and it messes them up, because if you go in as the characters are taking a break, right, it extends your time.
Sure.
And you don't necessarily wait, right? You figure out when they come back and you time it.
Exactly. And I will qualify my statement that I've hardly ever waited. I also do not get in the line if there's a long line.
Well, there's other things to do in that building, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You can do Animation Academy or Turtle Talk. I will say the one time that I would avoid getting in line for Anna and Elsa is right when the Frozen show has let out.
Oh,
sure. That is the one time you will consistently see a long line.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Which makes total sense.
So, Dustin, you know, you were there during a busy time of year, during your Memorial Day weekend, and the park was a real magnet because of the new attraction opening and all of that. Mm-hmm. And you had young kids with you. At what point during the day would you advise, or do you advise, that you need to kind of shut it down for a little bit? You know, get the kids out of the sun, out of the park, and get that break time in, so that you can come back and enjoy World of Color later and or tonight. Right.
For us, since, you know, we're getting up early and we're there for rope drop, that, you know, our kids pretty much right around lunchtime or right after lunchtime, you could tell the kids are getting at a point where they need to get out of the sun and we need to go take a break. So sometimes, you know, we'd eat lunch in the park, or since we were staying off site but within walking distance, we would, you know, find a restaurant along the way and stop and grab something to eat there before heading back to the hotel.
Okay. Yeah. Good suggestions. And did you feel like, one or the other of those ended up being a better strategy? In other words, were there times where you said almost back to your hotel thinking, gosh, we should have grabbed lunch before we got out of the park, or vice versa saying, gosh, why did we, wait longer, push the kids to have lunch in the park. We should have just come back.
No, typically outside of the park, you know, there's no wait at the restaurants around there. But everything in the parks was, you know, packed full of people. Sure. So some of the times it's like we should have just left and gotten lunch outside instead of waiting in the lines, you know, to eat in the park.
Sure, sure. All right. And Chris, is that, you know, the way you would approach it? I know you've got some younger ones with you, too.
I would say midday, we typically will hit up Bugs Land. There's more shaded attractions. Plus, they have the Princess Puddle Park water play area that the kids can cool off in.
Sure.
I know I tend to get my first churros around that area for the day.
There you go.
First of many. But there's plenty of, and there's hardly ever any wait for those attractions. And they're all pretty well covered and shaded. Right, and right. It's a real nice breakup from the madness of everything else. And it's usually not a crowded area. We tend to find it's a nice, relaxing stop, breakup of the day where we're not running around and we can just let them dictate what we're going to do next. If they want to hit up one of the attractions more than once or twice, we say we go for it.
Cool. Cool.
We do a lot of rider swaps, so we would get our fill of Bugs Land all throughout the day.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So go ahead.
Oh, it's all right. I wanted to point out that, you know, Dustin, when you say, you know, you're doing rider swaps and things like this, you're not just traveling with little kids, and we alluded to it, but you know, one of your kids you were traveling with was still a babe in arms.
Right. You know, so one, Bugs Land, you know, they can pretty much do everything there except for the bumper cars. So that's, and there's no waits. So that's the go-to area when the, you know, my wife and the older one are off riding something with the height requirement. Bugs Land's the go-to place.
Sure. Sure. And, David, you've reached the point now where, you know, your daughter's kind of gotten into that next sort of older, age range where she can kind of ride everything. The stamina is better. So
yeah, although we have kind of, I've noticed, I never did this intentionally, but I realize looking back on trip reports and things like that, we've kind of developed this natural rhythm of like, we hit it really, really, really hard in the morning, try to get all the rides out of the way. And then it's time for a nice sit down lunch and, you know, maybe the Frozen show or, you know, something where we just get to sit and relax and chill out for a while.
Okay, so you kind of build your break into the park instead of needing to leave the park.
Yeah, and we've kind of always done that. I think probably we've only ever taken a midday break at a park a handful of times.
Okay. All right, so we talked kind of about, you know, your morning attack, where you head next, your afternoon break. Let's kind of finish up with a good overarching evening plan. And obviously, we're speculating a little bit here because, you know, we're going to have a change up pretty soon when we get the introduction of the parade there in the evening. But does anybody have a sense of how you think you would plan to approach the evening show? Because one of the things that struck me about California Adventure in the evening is that there are parts of the park that are really beautiful, but it's not necessarily an easy park to navigate after dark. I mean, maybe that was just me, but.
No, it's really not. Unless you really know your way around there. There are stretches of it that are fairly dark. It's not, you know, incredibly well lit like Disneyland is. I could see that. Yeah, I don't know. It's so hard for me to even think about how we're going to handle the nighttime stuff without knowing what the schedule is going to be.
Right. Well, I mean, let's assume for the sake of argument, because it does seem logical that, you know, let's assume that we've got that sort of typical, not peak season, but kind of just off season time schedule, which means you've got that 9 o'clock close with 9 o'clock World of Color, maybe 10 o'clock close, 10 o'clock World of Color. So you're probably going to get a parade at, you know, presumably
8:30 or 9:30.
Yeah. Yeah, sometime between 8 and 9 is what I would think.
Ooh, I just had a really interesting thought.
Okay.
So, you know what a big fan I am of the World of Color Dessert Party.
Yes, and that's sort of where prime, I was trying prime, to head here.
That is a prime parade spot.
Oh.
That could very easily turn into a combo, you know.
Now we got to go back to our time question, because now you've got me wondering, you know, they make a pretty penny off of that dessert party. So yeah. I can almost see them doing what they have done at times. Yeah, I can see them doing what they've done at times at Disneyland, which is to do, you know, a 7:30, 8 o'clock dessert party for the parade. And then a second seating.
And then an 8:30 for or 9 o'clock for World of Color. Although I think that time would be incredibly tight. But where I thought they would go is just jack up the price of the party, and you get to watch both.
All right. Well, that could happen. But that almost makes me think that if they can figure out a way, because obviously it's got to be good and dark for Paint the Night. But mm-hmm. you know, if they can get enough time between them. You know, it's not like Disney to leave money on the table, literally.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thought.
So I guess we'll just have to watch schedules and watch announcements and see, you know, what comes out of that. I'm presuming, Dustin, that with the little ones, you don't necessarily get back for evening entertainment all the time.
Yeah, we try to, you know, as long as she'll take a nap in the stroller, you know, or be willing to fall asleep, you know, we try to. So we'll bring whatever we can to distract or entertain to keep them up, you know, later. So World of Color, you know, one of our favorite nighttime shows. So if we're there, we're making it a priority to go see it.
Okay. You know,
only once we had to leave, and that was years ago when my son was still young. And we forgot his pacifier in the room.
Oh, no. Ouch.
And that was rough, to where we just couldn't keep him, you know.
Yeah.
Keep him to stay and watch, so we had to leave before the show. But now, you know, we're more prepared, so we're ready for all of that. So we make it a point to catch the nighttime entertainment while we're there.
Okay. And then, you know, Chris, what's your usual approach to the evening? I mean, I know that you're not as much necessarily a fan of the dessert parties as David is. He's got the advantage of a small family, so it's a little easier to stomach. What's your approach?
What we've done in the past, a few of our trips have included the dining packages for World of Color. Now, of course, the disadvantage of the dessert party is you do not get seating, but you get what you could call premium or better viewing area
than
a regular fast pass. We've done the dining package at Ariel's Grotto, as well as the Wine Country Trattoria. We have not done Carthay Circle, but that is available. It's good. It's not too expensive to get a decent spot for the show. It's definitely a must. Never been, I have to say, because it's always changing. As I've seen it with different themes and different little skits within the show. So if the dessert party, like, I have younger kids, so I can't put up, what is it, $79?
Yeah, I think current price is $79.
For some cheeses and cookies and fruit and alcoholic beverage. Now, the kids do get the cool lit cup that goes along with the show. So, I mean, there's an advantage there to try to make the price worth it. But I know that I can't find the value in that for my little ones. If it was my wife and I would probably wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah, and to compound the problem with younger kids, it's desserts that kids probably aren't going to be that much of a fan of. It's things like macaroons and, you know, it's not super sweet stuff that kids are used to.
Right, they're really good desserts, but they're
great.
They're elegant desserts more than they're gooey.
Sure.
I'll take the dining package that includes a dessert I know they'll eat. and if they don't, it will get eaten.
Yeah.
I have in the past too. If you need, now I can't stand for a very long time. The show is 28 minutes long. They do have seating. It need be if you do ask a cast member, if they have it available for, you know,
yeah,
handicap. Right. If you absolutely need it, I find it difficult to stand that long at times, especially it being the end of the day. I'm beat.
So yeah.
If it comes to it, it doesn't hurt to ask if it's available.
Sure.
Now, of course, if someone who is much older than I am that needs it, then I will have no qualms with standing up and allowing them to take the seat. But if it's available, I definitely take advantage of it.
Right, right. And yeah, look, you got an injury. It's perfectly legitimate to do that and take it, you know, use that. That's what it's there for. But we do appreciate that, obviously, you know, you keep that spirit of respect for elders and that kind of thing alive and, you know, give up the seat when you can too. All right. Well, is there anything about sort of, because we kind of now covered a full day at California Adventure, anything that we haven't talked about or haven't addressed that you think it's important for people to come in, to keep in mind when they're trying to plan a day at DCA, especially in light of some of the shifting traffic patterns in the park?
I'd say Disney Junior Live we hadn't covered either. There's a change in that show as well.
Yeah.
I did a pretty extensive, not super long, but I did a report on that in the trip report that's upcoming. I think it's a welcome change. It's a real improvement on the show.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear that because we did get to see we were there for the very last week of its original iteration with the puppets and I heard what it was supposed to be, but I know it's definitely different.
Yeah, it has full size characters now. Yay! Oh, one thing that probably deserves mentioning. You know, we were talking a while ago about good places, you know, or good times for kids to take breaks and things like that. Redwood Creek Challenge Trail. If your kids need to blow off some steam, you know, because they've been waiting in lines all day, things like that, just take them over there, let them run for an hour. You know, it's yeah, DCA's that's a great version little thing of Tom, that people Tom don't Sawyer's think Island, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great little thing that people forget about sometimes, right? It's just kind of out of sight, out of mind almost, because it's not like you have to get a fast pass for it or anything.
Yeah, it's in the backwoods.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, especially after something like, you know, they've dealt with that long line in the heat for Grizzly River Run and, you know, you get off, you're good and wet. You don't want to head directly back to the hotel and, you know, go into the air conditioning and shiver. That's a great time. You know, hit the trail for a little bit, kind of shake it out a little bit, dry off in the heat, in the warmth for a while, and then head back.
Yeah. It's a great place over there. We try to visit it at least once every trip.
Right. Any other tips, tricks, thoughts? All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean just for planning out your character meets. You know, they have the standard characters there, and then the one thing we liked was having Nick and Judy from Zootopia out there. That we made it a point that was a priority for us to be able to see them, since that's really the only place you can.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's
where what spot did you see them at?
They were right past Ariel, where you would get the fast passes for World of Color.
Yeah, kind of right in between. Yeah, right in between Ariel and Grizzly River Run over there.
Yeah, right over in that area.
Okay, so that if that's where I saw them a month before you were there, then it would seem like that seems to be the common place where they meet up.
Yeah. And it's nice that they meet together, you know,
to yes, rare, that's two characters rare.
Together.
And that's a good example of just in general, especially for folks who are not as used to the way that, that character meet and greets and things go on the West Coast. It definitely sort of keep in mind when you're doing your planning for Disneyland in general, Disney California Adventure, what we're talking about tonight, grab that times guide on the way in and just kind of keep in mind that there are likely to be character meet and greets that are maybe these kind of, you know, one-off, right? They're not the standard ones that are always there and always in the same place. And check that times guide and take advantage of these sort of special event character meets that may only be there for a little while. I mean, this one's a good example. The Summer of Heroes character meet and greets are another good example of some really great character meet and greets that are only available for a fixed period of time and may move around depending on, you know, park flow and all kinds of other stuff. And periodically they'll bring out a classic character that hasn't been out for a while. And you just got to kind of watch for those things to appear in the times guide. All right. Well, you know, you all have heard our tips and our suggestions for managing a day of touring at Disney California Adventure. We'd love to hear what you think. You can email those tips to us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog and post them over there at dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. Oh, and hey, when this podcast comes out, there will still be a couple of days left. You could jump over to teespring.com, and we've got some DizDads logo shirts available again. They're only going to be available through the first, you know, very beginning of August. If people are still excited about them and ordering, we'll probably go ahead and renew it for a little while longer, but it's hard to predict that now 10 days in advance. So we just got them out there. The link directly to them is on the Facebook page or in the blog post. Those are available just for a limited time, so take a look and order. 50% of our profit from those shirts goes directly to a charity that works on suicide prevention. So, you know, you can get your logo shirt and do a little good along the way. Till next time, I've been Aaron Ripmaster with David Platt.
Thanks for listening to us ramble, everybody.
Chris Papchek.
Good night, everyone.
And our newbie, Dustin Hertz.
Yep, it was fun. That's your biggest fear when you're doing a Max Pass is having your phone die.
Oh, man. One thing I meant to point out, too, is that you can't get the World Color Fast Passes on Max Pass.
I even wrote that down in my notes. Yeah, I totally forgot. With the difference between Disneyland and DCA is we've got alcohol, so...